Welcome to International Clearance. It's episode 4 of this football podcast that tracks and speaks to footballers past and present that have left the UK to go and play overseas. I am your co-host, Joe Walker, joined as always by Scully.
What's going on, fellas and ladies?
Come on, and everyone else in between. Hopefully you're subscribed by now, and hopefully you've checked out the episodes we've had thus far. But if you are new, welcome. Apologies for any kind of references that don't make sense already at this point. We've already got some bits that only make sense if you've heard the first couple.
Shout out to Team Hawaii.
Yes, it has been nice actually looking at the stats for the episodes, how when a new one comes out, especially when new people arrive, they do go and listen to all the rest, which is nice. And yeah, we hope you enjoy those if you're just listening today. But if this is your first one, welcome. Something you won't know, as Scully will inform you, is that we do give a heads up on the guests of each podcast. You'll know the guest on this one today because it's in the title, but we give teasers, don't we, Scully?
Yes, indeed. So what you can do is go to our social media pages, as in INTL Clearance on Instagram, same again on Twitter, and they'll be tweeted out a picture of the passport where you can see a passport, no photo though, just stamps of clubs where the player has played. If you are quick enough, you can piece it together. You can have an inkling of who's on the show next. I think last week was one of our harder ones, but we actually got some responses, to be fair. Big up at DRAC0306, aka Simo, who's first to guess Brenton Mohammed as last week's guest. Listen, big him up because that is very fine work.
Or he Googled. We can never be sure.
Yeah, we're hoping, we're trying to trust you, basically.
Yes, yes. We're not offering prizes, so the Googling is not that necessary. It's not that important. But we'll see. Anyway, we were recording on transfer deadline day last week, and we said if there were any sort of relevant deadline day deals, British people going overseas, we'll let you know. And to be honest, I think there was just the one that we caught anyway. Hibs midfielder Stevie Mallon, who's 24 years old. He's gone to Turkey to get some more game time. He's joined Yeni Malatyaspor on loan for the rest of the season with an option to buy as well. They're a mid-table side in the Turkish Super League. Turkey's the place to be. If you want to get out of here and get some, or just be in a nicer part of the world right now during the winter.
Super League looks like it is popping right now. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, not for everybody yet. We'll get onto that later.
Not so many deadline day deals, but a few players are returning from abroad. We've got the ex-Sunderland striker, Josh Marja, who's just signed for Fulham on loan from Bordeaux. Yeah. That should be pretty interesting as Fulham look to do the great escape. Do you think they'll do it?
I don't know. They draw a lot of games. But for someone like him, it's a Premier League move for him. Can't remember whether he left Sunderland in the Championship or in League One. But it's a great move for him. He got some game time at Bordeaux. He scored a couple goals. So yeah, to come back to London, his home city, playing in the Premier League.
Decent little move. Fair play to him. I'll be watching. Yeah, I'll definitely be watching. Max Clark has rejoined Hull City after a couple of years at Vitesse Arnhem. Well, funnily enough, we actually talk about Vitesse and its potential on the podcast.
Yeah, we haven't really covered it yet, but I feel like it's inevitable. This idea of feeder clubs or clubs that are closely associated with British clubs. So Chelsea have a very close connection with Vitesse and they loan a lot of players out there. People like Solanke and Mason Mount, of countless other players have played out Vitesse Arnhem on loan from Chelsea. And another one, they don't really have a connection anymore, but Royal Antwerp in Belgium for years were very closely associated with Manchester United. And people like Fraser Campbell, Danny Higginbottom, John O'Shea have all played out on loan at Royal Antwerp just to get some first team football experience. So yeah, maybe we'll get someone, I think.
It'll be interesting to see what club, and I'm assuming it will be Chelsea, has sent the most players on loans abroad. We'll need to do some digging into that, but I reckon, you know, probably will be Chelsea.
Yeah, again, something we said at the very first episode, because of the pyramids that we have and how deep it goes and how many professional sides there are in England particularly, there's not necessarily as much of a need to send players overseas. The top teams now, whether it's Chelsea or Manchester City, have the City group, or you know, they move their players between, you know, Melbourne City and the New York City FC, and so there is some movement there possibly. But not as much as what we've got with Chelsea. That's the more obvious one. I don't know if Watford has sent any of their local players over to Granada or Udinese. But I imagine Chelsea's in the front runners anyway. So some quick updates on players that we spoke about from last week. First of all, Danny Drinkwater still awaiting his Kashim Pasha debut. I don't know my Turkish well enough to get any more info on that mysterious swimming pool injury that's ruled him out. And then we'll let you know when he plays, because we're kind of keen for him to kick on and succeed.
I feel like we're emotionally invested in that one.
Yeah, it's getting silly at this point. Well, positively, his former Leicester teammate, Damari Gray, scored 10 minutes into his debut for Bayer Leverkusen. I think they beat Bochum, I believe. And he came off the bench and scored. I mean, that's good for it. That's really exciting, because we spoke about him leaving for there. We were talking about, you know, he'll have to get minutes, so it's not going out there to start. There's some really decent players ahead of him. But, you know, it's just about enjoying the game time, finding it where you can. That's a blistering start.
Leverkusen are fifth right now in the Bundesliga. They've not had the best run of form compared to how well they're doing at the start. But, you know, they could definitely finish in the top three, maybe even second. So, yeah, if he manages to, you know, be a major part of that team, it will bode very well for him. We know how well young youth players are doing in the Bundesliga. So, yeah, long may it continue.
On that theme of young English players in the Bundesliga, now on to today's special guest. This is someone who went to Germany as a teenager before it was all trendy. Today's guest is Mandela Egbo. He's a right back. He's still playing. He's our youngest guest we've had so far. He's 23 years old from Hackney. And he came through the Crystal Palace Academy and left before playing, before signing any professional terms there, to go and play in Germany for Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's now playing in the United States on what is actually a home from home. We'll get into that. But I think we're going to get a lot of first-time listeners on today's episode because of the situation about leaving Palace, which there was a public perception of how that went down. And you're going to find out a different version from what you know, which is going to intrigue a lot of Palace fans, I presume.
Yeah, I think obviously you're excited to do this as a Palace fan. I think I was quite excited to do this one because, like you said, he went over early before it was cool. He set pace. And yeah, I'm excited for some more of his story to be revealed.
Well, let's not waste any more time. Let's get into it. Today's guest on episode 4 of International Clearance. Here is us chatting with Mandela Egbo.
Mandela Egbo, what's going on?
I'm well, thank you, guys. I'm good. How are you both?
I'm feeling good. We're looking forward to doing this one.
So, Mandela, I'm a Palace fan. And obviously, you had years in the Palace Academy. You're winning Scholars Awards, playing with England youth sides. And then you turned down pro terms at like 17. What were your reasons for that initially? What was the story then when you were kind of thinking about where you were going to sign your first contract?
I'd been at Palace as a kid, as a schoolboy, and then it came to scholarship and was enjoying my scholarship at Palace. First year scholar playing for the 18, second year scholar then played for the 21s. And obviously alongside, like you said, playing for England a lot of the time throughout, you know, 16, 17s, 18s. And it just got to the stage where, you know, as you can sign a pro anytime from the age of 17 onwards, basically. So a lot of kids will get them at 17, and a lot of kids will wait till the end of their scholarship. And I was a scholar and I turned 17 and I just hadn't heard anything from Palace. So obviously I'm still under contract because I got to the end of my scholarship anyway. So I'm not stressing as such, but kids around me turning 17 in the England youth team and signing their pros, and not only in the England youth team, but also at Palace as well, you know, turning 17, signing their professional contracts. So I was a bit like, what's going on here? And nothing ever came from Palace. And and things were coming from other places. And still, you know, my home club hadn't offered me anything. So really, when I signed for Gladbach, there had been no offer from Palace, which is what a lot of people don't really get.
Okay. Because, I'll get into how it's kind of perceived from the outside. But yeah, do you think they were just complacent because they thought, right, Mandela's not going to go anywhere. We'll offer him something at the end of the terms that he's currently on.
That's the only explanation I could really get. Actually, I'll tell a lie. There was a bit of a ruckus one time at the training ground when my agents come in. They had a few players at the club, I believe, and he come actually to talk about their situations. Then all of a sudden, they found themselves talking about my situation, and he was getting a blame for wanting to move me out of the club. And the club's like, what's going on with Manny? We've offered him his terms, blah, 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 and you're trying to move him. And they come on, you know, angry at him, crud. And he said, hang on a sec. First of all, we're not here to speak about Manny. If you want to speak about Manny, we'll make another meeting for that. But secondly, Manny hasn't been offered anything by you lot. So I don't know what it is that you expect him to sign. And then there was a ruckus at the training ground. I remember it. The gaffers come in, got involved. The under 21s and academy directors got involved. And everybody's going, having a go at my agent. And he just said, listen, you lot haven't offered this boy anything. Not by word of mouth and definitely not contractually. So I don't know why you're getting angry at me. I'm not trying to move your boy. If your boy wants to move, that's another issue. But there's nothing on the table. When there's something on the table, we'll look at it. Before that, we can't make assumptions.
Right.
And then they chuck him out of the training ground saying stuff like, you're never gonna have another one of our players at the ground at this club, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not in that meeting. But then the end of the day comes and they call me into the office. And then it's the 18th gaffer at the time calls me in, who I've got a very good relationship with. And he says, listen, the club's had a look at the books and we just wanted to apologize to you because we realized we haven't offered you a professional contract up until this point. And I looked back at him like, you're lucky they've got you to tell me this because our relationship and your relationship with my dad is amazing. But after what they was just telling my agent, the apology should be louder than the disrespect.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's not because I wasn't in this meeting. You've come to apologize to me, but my agent's nowhere to be seen. And the gaffer and directors who were all in this meeting should be here telling him that they're sorry for assuming that he was trying to get me out of the club. So they went through their books, realized they hadn't offered me anything. Obviously, offers are taken account of. They're not just offered here willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So there was no account of an offer because they hadn't offered me anything. They said sorry. And then at that point said, all right, here's your first professional offer. This is way after my 17th birthday and actually towards the end of my last year as a scholar. And I could tell you how late it was in that year because I had already signed at Gladbach before then.
Right, okay.
It was like they're assuming this, that and the other. But they haven't actually taken steps into keeping me at the club.
It's nuts, right? Because I was all ready to talk about, for example, there's a massive academy complex being built at Palace right now. And it's been cited as like a thing they've needed for years because it stopped attracting certain caliber of young players. It's maybe not helped when it comes to keeping young players at the club, even though Palace are in the Premier League and there's players, youth products in the team right now, there's still players trying to leave the club because ultimately up until, well, even now as we speak, Palace's academy do their classes in temporary classrooms and they play pitches next to goals across the road from the training ground. And I always thought that was the reason. It was like comparing that to Gladbach and their big facilities, it's going to be a no-brainer really. But the fact that that decision didn't even have to be made for you because you weren't even getting offered the thing is just kind of stunned me, to be honest, because I think that's definitely something that people don't know from the outside at all.
No, I don't think I've ever been asked.
Sure.
So I've never actually explained it. But yeah, like you said, even up to this day, the goals facility that they have, I think, now bought is being redeveloped. It looks nice and etc. But you got to think, when we were at the club, that was goals. We were training at goals. We were training sometimes on the Astro at goals, you know, in five-side pitches. And if we didn't, we'd train on the grass next to goals, which was not nice. It was goals.
Yeah.
Now it's Palace owned, I think.
Yeah, they bought the whole area,
right? Yeah, cool. So at the time, it was just goals. Like we'll take the mick out of each other when we go there because it's like we're training at goals. It was a joke at the time.
It's always been a big issue, certainly amongst fans at Palace, have just been like that. That can't be the most, because any other Premier League club could just kind of go, if you want to play here, this is where we train. This is where we do the work. It can't compare to how that facilities were at that time. So, I mean, talk to me then. Let's go back to Gladbach. When you're first approached by them, who else is approaching you at that time that you're comfortable talking about? How are they approaching you at that time? Do you have a look around the grounds? How's that work?
Nah, the only place I went to look at was Gladbach. Like I said, I was still under contract at Palace. I was still training daily at Palace.
Sure.
The only place I actually went to look at was Gladbach. And it would just be agents saying, this club's interested, this club's interested. But this club, Gladbach, is a sensational club. And if you don't like them, we don't have a look at others. But I think this would suit you. So we went to have a look, and it was literally a case of, listen, these guys, like, we don't need to keep searching. These guys are here and it looks good. Let's run with this. And that's what we did in the end.
Very interesting that you kind of just knew when you got there, like, oh, I like this place. Was there anyone who came from the team that you noticed or had your eye on, or was it literally just the facilities when you got there?
It was the whole, I mean, we talk facilities, yeah, stadium and training ground. The fact that the stadium and training ground is the same facility, which is very common in Germany, actually. The fact that they were a team that's obviously well known, you know, for their European run in the 70s, so well known to the older, like a proper German team, yeah, properly family based, proper heritage and history. And then as I was going there, they'll just get back into the Champions League. So it's like they're getting back to their heights again. And, you know, they have a corridor filled with shirts of the players that have made the step from the youth into the first team. So the path is quite literally there for you to see.
Yeah, there was a Guardian piece you did a few months after you'd moved that kind of referenced that, the fact that it wasn't really a blind decision of like, I've seen a big name in lights here. It was like there was such a pathway that you could see that just made it a lot of an easier decision.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, they were playing in like a European youth league as well, which must have been
exactly,
like elite level.
Exactly. So, you know, when you played in the Champions League, I think this was even the second year that it started. They started this youth league thing. Your first team plays in the Champions League, then your under-19s play in the youth league as well. And I thought that was, you know, I was excited to play in one of the two. Obviously, going there young, so it was probably going to be the youth league. That didn't happen in the end. God knows why to this day, I've never asked, because I went straight into the 23s and they didn't bring me down to play 19s for them youth league games. But yeah, no, that was definitely a thing I was thinking, yeah, I would love to play in the youth league as well. But that's very short-term vision. That's very 17-year-old kid vision. The longer-term vision was more, you know, the pathway into the first team.
In hindsight now, do you think it's better that they put you straight into the under-23s?
Definitely better that I wasn't playing 19s on a regular basis, but I would have still loved to have, you know, come down and played 19s for those Champions League games or youth league games.
Did you have any apprehensions moving to Germany? Like, I'm assuming you didn't know the language. What was that like?
I didn't know the language, but at the same time, I don't remember having any apprehensions. I remember actually just the decision making seemed so, like you mentioned, no brainer to me, that I just flew into it with, you know, open arms and an open mind. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel anxious at the time. And I've always looked back as to why not, because when it was time to leave Gladbach, then when it was time to move to the US, there was a lot more apprehension at the time. And I think I can only put it down to age. I was just young, not thinking about anything else but just going out there and doing what I love doing, like on a daily basis. So I flew at it.
Now, what was that transition like in terms of life, like being in Germany?
It was interesting looking back at it with hindsight. Because at the time, like I said, I was literally just living in the moment. I mean, literally flown out there and just taken to it. Started having German lessons. I was around a team that was really, really good. I went into the 23s for a week before the first team started training. Then the first team come. And as you can imagine, the first team's more international than the 23s. Just because, you know, they buy players as opposed to all their players being German kids. So those guys took me in very well. Everybody spoke English. There was Ibrahima Traore, at the time, is one of just a couple black guys in the team. He's from Guinea, I believe. And he just took me under his wing from literally the first week. Took me out to spots that he would chill at. Took me to introduce me to his mates, introduce me to his family. And it's, you know, he's from France, but plays for his home team, Guinea. So he's born and raised in Paris and blah, blah, blah. And you know, French kids and French youths, they always have a whole load of people around him. So if it's not his cousins, if it's not his, he's got a big family, if it's not his brothers, his mum and dad will be at the house all the time flying over. So he just introduced me to everybody and I would be at the house afternoons after training. He just took me under his wing. So literally that transition was seamless.
Mönchengladbach is right next to the French border, I believe, yeah?
It's close. It's to get to France, you'd have to go through Holland and then Belgium. So
not too far.
It's not too far. No, like literally his people would be driving back and forth from Paris. It's about a 4-hour drive.
Did your family and friends, how did they see that as a, because I guess it's not really a long flight that way. Did you find there was a lot of coming and going? to so, see?
Yeah. My family was coming and going all the time. I got injured in pre-season, in my first pre-season, in my first week, like I said, with that first team, literally the day before the first pre-season game. It might have been even been the morning before I got injured. And my dad was at majority of the home games, even when I wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. So he was flying out, you know, every other week. My mom was coming out during the half terms with my siblings. So yeah, no, there was definitely that. A few friends visited, my Titus brethren, Taufik came, Jacob, Berkeley Ajipong was at Palace at the time, been a couple times. So yeah, no, there was comings and goings. But you know, when you're in the first team and you're Ibo Traore, there's more comings and goings than when you're Manny Ebro.
It's very interesting. How did you acclimatize to the rest of the youth team? Who, like, I've got here a list of some of your more famous teammates, but is there anybody who you really connected with just because, you know, they were nice to you?
Yeah, another big factor. I just got lucky in the age that I came. They signed a kid called Jibril Sow from Switzerland, and he was in 97 as well. So he came out. We came out together and we stayed in the same hotel for the first few weeks, and we just went to eat together every day after training. We grew really close and we're still really close till today. And then there's another boy called William T. Ndenge, who now plays in Switzerland, actually, funny enough. He came through the academy at Leverkusen and then Gladbach. And he was in and around the first team and 23s exactly the same time as me. So those two young black African kids helped me no end. And obviously Will as well, let me not lie, introduced me to his mum and dad. And to this day, we speak, and took me over to his to eat and blah, 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 blah. So that was, to be fair, those two were probably even bigger than Ibrahima Traore and his influence.
Right. That's amazing that you've got there and you found people of your age that you can relate to a little bit more. It's definitely helped you ease in some way.
100% helped me no end. Probably improved the ability to learn and pick up the language so quickly and everything. Yeah.
So one of the more like obvious differences between the German system and the English one is the second teams, those like 23 sides or Borussia Mönchengladbach 2 that play in the men's leagues. How was that standard compared to, say, you playing in the developmental side, they were called at the time at Palace?
Yeah, it was different because you're playing up against men who, you know, the league, it's all the cliches that you hear when people talk about going out on loan and the difference between that and 23's football. It's, you know, men are playing for their livelihoods and they don't, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they don't really give a fuck about the young kid coming through the academies at these other clubs. So they're playing for their 3 points on the weekend, and you're playing in front of fans. And some of those teams in those lower leagues are teams that have fallen from glory at some point. So they've been in Bundesliga and second Bundesliga, and you go to their stadiums, and their stadiums hold 30,000, and they're still getting 15,000 in the stadiums. So that's very, very cool to play against when you're 17, 18, actually playing for a second team. It's not like playing for the 23s in front of just your mum and dad and a few other parents.
And it's not passive support either. German football, if they fourth tier side, whoever, if those 15,000 are going to sound like 30.
No. Facts. Those guys are following their teams. Like, our second team stadium wasn't the best, but sometimes when we played at home against some of these other teams, their fan base is coming and making it sound like they're the home team. In fact, sometimes those games were bigger than our home games when we played home against a team who has got a bigger way following. Yeah, no, that, it was cool. It was definitely a good experience.
In terms of training, how does it work? Are you kind of all collectively training as one side, or?
No, the first team is the first team and the second team is the second team. They're not mixed in terms of training.
Okay.
You can go up and down between. Certain players can be up and down in between. But they're two different organizations. They have two different sporting directors. Okay. They have two...
Right.
I mean, as much as they're two different organizations, they're still very closely intertwined, but they are two separate teams.
Mm.
And personally, for me, it was like when I went in there, it was that little stint with the second team as to get me acclimatized before the first team come in. Sure. And as soon as the first team were there, I was with them until I got injured. And then when I got injured, it ended up being that I was out for about 4 months, which probably definitely set me back a lot in terms of my career at Gladbach. And that slowed things down a lot. When I come down, I was almost back in the second team completely. And I was there, you know, training on a daily basis with the second team for a good couple of years before I managed to get myself back in the first team fold.
It's interesting, right? So now, if we're to talk about English players in Germany, well, it's kind of spoken a bit more generally and common because of high profile people like Sancho, for example. But when you made that decision and when you're over there in this period, like let's say 2015, 2016, it was still very rare. And so I know that you were in part of a squad that won championship with England under 17s and you have a couple of caps for the under 18s. Do you feel like once you went to Germany that any kind of assurances that they would be tracking how you would get on just didn't happen?
It was definitely, when I was out there, it was like there was no one to look at, you know, in terms of English kids playing abroad. Are they still getting picked for their national teams? There was just no proof that there was anyone coming to. I had no idea. Right. And I did think to myself, is it because I'm out here? And then I think after about a year and a half, the England national team got in touch with me. One of their scouts said, we're interested in getting you back in the fold or something along them lines. I don't remember why they would have got in touch with me out of the blue. And they said, look, we're going to send out a couple of scouts to come watch you. And I said to them, listen, it's so lame. I've fractured my wrist. So I'm out for the foreseeable. But, you know, if your guy's going to be there, you can come watch the game. I'll go up and meet him. And that's what happened. They sent a scout down to a Dortmund game, come to watch me, and I was out injured and we just sat in the stands together. So they were trying to show me that they were watching, but it was a couple years after I'd moved out there anyway.
Right.
I don't know if they were watching the time I was, you know, from when I moved to when they sent their guy out specifically to see me. I don't know. But I know obviously as more people started to make the move, then obviously it became more normal that kids would be flying into England camps from other places. So obviously it's going on now. There's definitely scouts in Europe.
What's the most common kind of misconception about your German experience?
That my career has taken a step back and I would have hit such greater heights if I stayed at Palace. That's obviously the clear one. And I've seen tweets like that. But no one can ever know. God knows where I would have been if I'd stayed at Palace. God knows where I'd be if I hadn't gone to Germany. God knows where I'd be if I'd played, you know, gone to another German club or another club somewhere else. All I know is that if we're talking of statistics, I'm one of one for players in my age group that were at Palace with me that still play professional football, which I think is wild.
Wow. Okay.
It's absolutely wild for the amount of talent that we had and the kids that were better than me and the kids that were ballers that, like, the best that some are doing is non-league and majority have dropped out of the game completely.
That's a very interesting statistic because there is so many great young ballers on ends who have so much talent, and a team like Palace could really benefit from that.
No, the hotbed in South London, in fact, in London overall, but especially in South London, is crazy, it's endless. And by the way, I want to just put on record that I do not blame any of the players for the fact that they may not be in the professional game no more. The system is completely flawed, and at some clubs worse than others, but I don't think there's any excuse on the player side for how I can be the only one still in professional football. Because at the end of the day, I got myself out of that system. And that's, I would imagine, what kept me in the game when that shouldn't be the case. You should be able to stay at Palace and get 23s and you know, do a 2 years of a pro contract and not be scared that you're going to be out of professional football by the end of it. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. That's my opinion.
Genuinely, though, that I think post your departure, there seems to have been at least a bit of an overhaul because I think they kind of had to look at themselves a bit, and Palace's equivalent of the players' posters on the wall and stuff. A lot of people that had chances in the championship, and then where the finances were low, and then they worked their way up. Whereas
exactly
in the Premier League, there's this kind of panic button process, which is like, okay, let's just pay 10, 15 million for someone and worry about it later. And after a while, the pathway is a bit restricted.
Do you know what it is? So saying that, it's just made me think it's probably not even a Palace problem. It's a 23s to Premier League problem in general.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, we had a generation before us, the Nathaniel Kleins, who I still look up to this day, the Wilfred Zahas, the Sean Scannells. Those guys were guys that I looked up to because they made it from, you know, from the youth team into the champ or in the first team. And like when I signed at Palace, it was in the champ. It was a championship club. The 96s, 97s, 98s age group may have just gotten unlucky, because as we're now turning into men and trying to make that step, Palace is now turning into Prem club and trying to make that step to become established. So
it's under managers, by the way, that we're not going to take those risks at that point in time. People like Tony Pulis, people like Neil Warnock did it in the Championship, to be fair, but that array of like Pulis, Pardew, Allardyce, they are in that moment in time, they're not inclined at that moment. And they did not, none of them really put any players through.
No, those ones that you mentioned, not so much. So Neil Warnock, great guy, great manager, took a big interest in myself and the youth team. Ian Holloway, just as much so. But I remember Ian Holloway coming from Blackpool, and his mistake that he reckoned he'd made at Blackpool was going up and trying to play with pretty much the same team, probably because Blackpool didn't have the funds to go out and get many players. And he didn't want to do that, make that same mistake at Palace. So what he's done is he's come up and he's brought in like 13, 14 new signings in one summer transfer period.
Yeah. A couple of them didn't even make the 25. He signed players that didn't make the 25. It was mad that summer.
Yeah, I remember that clearly because they would come and train with the 23s. So then I'm there in that time frame. And let's not get it twisted, I still managed to be involved and get myself in squads every now and then. So there was looking down, and I guess I was making enough noise. But the time period was they would interested solely on becoming, you can't blame them, interested solely in becoming a Prem team, an established Prem team, which they have done superbly well. And their thing was not youth players. And now they've checked themselves and it's back where it used to be. You see, Palace has a prominent academy in terms of, I don't know how their 23s do in the leagues. I think they do pretty well. But in terms of getting players from the 23s into the first team, it's started happening again of more recent.
I think it's going to be a big brief of whoever comes in next after Hodgson as well. Let's go back to Gladbach for a second. In terms of your graduation to the first team setup, what kind of timeline is that?
A long one. So we're talking, like I said, went in the first team for a little bit, came back down, also essentially dumped back in the 23s. And I say that looking back because when you're 18 and playing for under 23s, you don't see yourself as being dumped there.
Sure.
But I always had much bigger goals and ambitions. So it was very, very frustrating. Very frustrating as a kid, never been through that before and having to do it in a new country and away from family and friends. Mm. It was frustrating. And I just had to keep plugging away at it for years. And I'm plugging away. I'm trying to do my thing in the 23s, which is always harder anyway. When a kid comes down from the first team into the 23s to then do his thing there, it's I don't know why, but if you ask anybody who's tried to do it, it's always harder. You play worse. You don't know why you're playing badly. And, you know, you then have no leg to stand on as such.
Right.
But I just had to keep grinding. I had to keep at it for years. And what really made a big difference to me, I have to be honest, was them employing a specific coach. Otto Addo, his name is, of Ghanaian descent, who came in, was overseeing that jump between the first team and the second team, or the 19s, essentially the academy. Right. And when we signed him, I think it was during a summer holiday. So I'm at home. I remember I'm sitting exactly where I am now, just across the table, and I've seen that signing. You see, hang on, Gladbach have employed this black man who looks like us, who is now going to have a prominent position at the club. And there was immediately just this sense of, you know, if we don't do it now, we ain't got no excuse. Right. And I looked at that, I thought, yeah, man, let's do this. And he's come in. And like I said, now we've got these kids, remember, that I talked to you about that were around me at the time, who were young black African kids fighting to make that step up, who have kind of just been stagnant for a bit, but we're ballers regardless, but we're just stuck in this 23s. He's come in now and he has the opportunity to train with us. And of course, there's others who are German kids and white kids and all types of kids, but he's now training with us on a daily basis, a few times a week. We're getting extra sessions with him. He's coming in, he's sitting us down in front of computers. We're going through our games, and he is, if we deserve it, going straight to the first team gaffer and saying, listen, this kid needs a chance. Essentially, that's what happened with me. So he's come in, and obviously preseason starts in June. I'm with the second team and I'm playing for the second team. And then first international break comes September. And in the international breaks out there, we don't get much time off like we do in the UK, but we play friendlies. So the first team had a friendly, and Otto, this coach, he said to the gaffer, listen, got this kid who's a right back. We could do with a right back playing this friendly since a couple of them are going to wear on international duty. In fact, since really we don't actually have any natural right backs, and I don't know why this kid's not been looked at. Right. Here, look at him. And I go and play, and we play against Championship, second Bundesliga outfit. And I'm up and down that first half. I'm up and down the wing from right back. I hit the post, and last kick of the foot half, I score. And I have probably one of the halves of my life. We go in at 1-1. And second half, we come out, we play, and I get an assist for the winner. And now all of a sudden, everybody's buzzing. And I'm looking at everybody like, you waste man, I've been doing this. And everybody's buzzing, and the first team gaffer's buzzing, and he's like, this is our new lease of life. And I get injured end of that game. Story of my life at Gladbach, I swear to you. Never injured before, and then every time, and it's little things. I never had a big injury ever in my life, thank God, touch wood. But I go to Gladbach and I'd get these little niggles every time. That, like, remember, I explained to you, England come out to watch me, and I've broken my wrist. Like, what? Mm. So at the end of that game, I've done something in my knee. I'm not sure exactly what, and it just put me out for another 4 weeks. When the gaffer was hot for me, the gaffer's now coming and asking me, Manny, when are you going to be back? How you feeling? Blah blah blah. Out of the blue, this gaffer who didn't know who I was, right, you know, a few months before. And then I miss a good amount of time in that period, and that set me back a little bit as well. But anyway, eventually, we continue in that vein for another 6 months to a year. And that's the time when I then made my debut and started sitting on the bench and et cetera, et cetera. So it come down to obviously myself and sticking at it for years, but that guy Otto coming in and being employed and just really taking us under his wing and making sure that we was given the opportunities that we'd been deserving.
Because, the debut you mentioned there is February 2018, I believe. So that's like well into your third season there.
Exactly.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. So it was just grind and hard work and belief in myself and plenty of setbacks.
How did you stay motivated? Because I think myself personally, the way I stay motivated by my friends around me, and obviously you moved out to Germany, so what's keeping you going? How are you staying motivated?
Family's keeping me going and not going out there and not making the most of it and not proving people wrong is keeping me going as well. And the 21's director at Palace is keeping me going, and Steve Parrish is keeping me going, because the emails that they sent me when I left the club were not nice and I had to prove them all wrong. So they're keeping me going. I'll be honest, I've thought about them, you know, on a regular basis. I have to go out and do this. I have to make this happen. And so that kept me going. And just the fact that it had to work. There ain't nothing to come back to. You better make this work. You know, when you chuck someone in the deep end, you got to sink or swim, and there's no way I'm sinking.
Yeah. That debut then, you come on for an injured player. It's away at Hanover. You keep the clean sheet and win 1-0. Off the back of that appearance then, what plays out in the next few months?
A load of bullshit, like the 2 years before.
Okay.
So as everybody knows, it's my first and last Bundesliga game so far. Because maybe it won't be my last, but it was my first and last at Gladbach. And I played and we won. And it was the first win and a bad run and blah, blah, blah. And obviously that win was nothing. You know, I was a very, very small part in that win. I'm not saying that because we won, I should have played the next however many games from the start. But then I just didn't get a chance to play again. The gaffer who's put me in is the gaffer that I owe a lot to him, because he, like I said, he saw me in that game and then really tried to push me. But then after that, it was just stagnated again, and I'm not sure why. And they, you know, they were playing CBs at right back and
one of them,
and et cetera. I think they hadn't quite got enough trust in me to go and chuck me into starting on a regular basis. And as a right back, when you're on the bench, you're pretty much certain that you'll stay on the bench. It's not the position that you bring on, that you sub on to change the game. So it's like, if you can't get into that starting team, it's tough. And that's basically what happened for the next couple of years.
The final season there, 2018-19, when does your mind start to turn to maybe I should go get some games elsewhere? Was there like a moment like they signed another right back maybe, or just you kind of felt, or maybe a manager departed and something changed? What was there a moment where you're like, maybe I need to look elsewhere for games?
Yeah, at the end of that season where I made my debut, they started to push like a young 17-year-old German kid who was also a centre-back by trade or centre-mid by trade, but they started to push him as a right-back in the first team, and he would come up, and then I just started to see things that were like they're trying to push him ahead of me.
Right.
So at the end of that season, I said, listen, to a German agent of mine who I don't work with anymore, I said to him, what do you think about using this little buzz? I've made my debut this season. It wasn't long ago. Let's try to use that to get myself something in the second Bundesliga or a lower Bundesliga team and start, you know, move out the club. And he says, why would you want to do that? You've just made your debut. It's all looking good. You go in this season, blah, blah, blah. And I've said, listen, I've seen the signs. Like, this kid, watch, they're going to try a thing with this kid. He's like,
You know his flavor of the month in the training ground, basically.
Yeah. You feel it. I've been in the game, not forever, but I know how the game works. I feel it. So I said to him, I would rather try to use this to get out now and not waste a year and make it more difficult in a year's time. And he wasn't with it, or there was nothing. I don't know. You can never be sure. But it sounded like he wasn't really with it. And he was more the case of come in and do your thing again in preseason and see what happens. And I came in and did my thing in the preseason. I went with the first team. And then we went to Southampton one game. So I'm back home, family comes down, you know, Southampton fans are there, it's a pre-season friendly, but I'm the first time I'm back on English soil. And he brings me on for about 10 minutes at the end of the game, after telling me during that week and in the lead up to that game that everybody's going to get 45s. Like I said, the guy, it's like he likes me, but he's not showing it by my minutes. So he'll come to me, he'll do that and then come to me after and be like, oh, Manny, you're doing so well. I apologize for that. We just wanted to get such and such and such more minutes because such and such and such. And there was always an excuse for it. And it was all nice and hunky-dory. But at the end of the day, you can like me as much as you like as a person. Man wants to play.
Yeah.
So it was just little things like that. That was just like, this ain't it. And after stuff like that, I started thinking, all right, cool. Now I'm just playing to get a move and to try to make my situation as good as it can be come the end of this last year of my contract.
One thing I have to remark is that you seem very clued in on what you had to do to make your position better as a professional player. I think there's this myth of club loyalty that we throw on to players, like you have to stay at your club and try and make it work as long as possible. But at the end of the day, you're working a job, and if they're not seeing the value and worth in you, you should move somewhere else and try and kickstart what you believe and where you believe you can take your career.
It's the biggest myth. And like I said, I learned it from a young age because I've been with a family my whole life. And these boys are now family to me. Like these boys that I've grown up with and spend a lot of my time with from the age of 12 to the age of leaving at 17, 18, right? And then I leave and I see Palace just chuck these boys to the side. So that ain't loyalty. Like you're telling me that I'm unloyal for leaving your club. You've done exactly the same thing to all of these boys that were loyal and stayed. So I know from then that this club loyalty thing is a myth.
That took your like wide-eyed enthusiasm out of it, being like, well, maybe if I just, you know, like holding on to the little positives that a manager might have said.
100%, 100%. At the end of the day, and remember, I've been at Gladbach 3 years and played 23s. So it's not like you've been on me this whole time. I've been doing me and I've just got to do me. And so that's not going to change. I just had to do me or try to do me.
So when does Darmstadt come into the equation?
Towards the end of that season. What year is that? 2019?
Yeah.
Midway through the end of that half of the season, around, you know, yeah, March, April time. Because there's then talk of, you know, a few clubs come to see and a few clubs are interested in which ones are going to be the best for me and which ones do I like and which ones like me enough to actually offer. And by the time it came down to it, there wasn't much, and Darmstadt was the most solid. And yeah, we got that sorted pretty smoothly, I would say. Their head scout come to chat to me, and then I went to chat to their sporting director, and then they made an offer, and it was very, very simple.
What's the comparison like? So obviously Gladbach are this historical team in Germany, and obviously quite a sizable club as well. But Darmstadt are like they've been a couple of years out of Bundesliga. What kind of ground do they play at? What was the size of the place?
It's a traditional club again, but it's, you know, it's like a, you know, when you talk about a traditional club, you don't really talk about the clubs that are traditional, but in lights, you talk about the gritty and hardworking clubs. That's exactly what Darmstadt is. Traditional, everybody's honest and hardworking and knows that they're there not to be in the newspapers, but to do a job. Mm-hmm. But it's been what I'd used to at Palace anyways. And I'm not this kid that grew up with a silver spoon. So Gladbach was extraordinary to me. And then Darmstadt was like being back in the trenches, like what I'm used to. Okay.
Did you like that? Did you like that feeling of, as you put it, being back in the trenches?
Yeah, I did. I did. I can't lie. I love it. I love being home for the winter breaks and the summer breaks and getting back in the gym, you know, in Hackney. And I'm just in Hackney and I'm grinding and I'm running in the streets and I'm in the marshes or at Haggerston Park. I'm climbing over the gates when they lock them because apparently you can have a park open but can't have the football pitch open during lockdown, which is ridiculous to me. I'm climbing over gates. I love being in the trenches. It's where I'm at my, the gym is where I'm at my most comfortable and where I get a lot of my stress out. So I love it. I love it.
So you've gone to Darmstadt, and what's on your mind? Where are you thinking?
I'm thinking a year of this, two max, and get me back into the Bundesliga. Mm. And even that, I'm restless about because, like, oh, where do you go from the second Bundesliga? You go to a lower Bundesliga team. I'm going to have to do another couple years there, and then this, that, and the other. How long is it going to be before I'm back? So I'm restless, and then I'm not playing as much as I want to be first season. And I'm restless and I'm thinking, nah, I need to, like, there's nothing's going to change the situation now, but I need to, next year I need to do it and, you know, make it a year of games and bus and move again, get myself a move and somehow try to blag the biggest move possible. So that was my thing. My thing was, I mean, Darmstadt thing wasn't ever come and stay forever either because they're just trying to flip. They're trying to make a flip as well. So we were both on the same page that you come in here, you do your thing and you move again to the Bundesliga. Their thing was you do it in 2 years and my thing was do it in a year. And that's the only difference we had. But obviously doing it in 2 years, just getting back there would have been my thing. So I didn't have a problem with that. We never had no falling out at Darmstadt. Darmstadt did a lot for me in terms of letting me then go to New York as well when they saw that opportunity come.
And how did the opportunity in New York come?
Out of the blue. So after I moved to Darmstadt, I told my German agents that I didn't want to keep working with them and I moved to a different German agency. So just to explain my agency situation, I've had my English guys that have been there since day one, elite. So whereas I've been out of their market for a while, those have just been my brothers throughout the whole thing. Those have looked after me in ways you wouldn't even believe. So love and respect to them every time. But anyway, so yeah, now I've got German agents and I've got them and I've switched my German agents and about 3 or 4 months into being a club, about 6 months, let's say, they've said, oh, Manny, the head scout at New York Red Bulls is a new guy, a new English guy, but he knows you because he was just a head scout in the second Bundesliga at the team down the road from Darmstadt, actually. So he's wondering if you have any interest in coming out to New York. Think about it and let me know. And we're in December, so we're talking kind of like December, January transfer period, and there ain't really much time to think. It's just, you know, if this makes sense for your career. So I've talked to my family for a bit, and it was a stage in my life where I thought I just needed a change. I wanted to try something new. And I just thought, yeah, man, let's do it. And then it got done pretty quick.
I was shocked at that because it's clocked at 5 league appearances with Darmstadt. Are there injuries that factor in that? Or is it just the fact that it was just such a quick turnover, really?
Both. It's like when I first came was, this kid's come and he's good and we're going to get him involved. And I was coming off the bench. Like I said to you, right backs don't come off the bench.
Yeah.
But this gaffer's now bringing me off the bench every game, putting me up top, right back, left mid, right wing. He's just finding a way to get me on.
Right.
And then that changed. I just like flick of a switch and I didn't get it. And we never had a falling out as such. In fact, we never had a falling out at all. So it was strange to me. And then I wasn't playing as much as I thought I should be. Started a couple games in that as well. So there's coming on the bench and starting a couple games. And all I can say is that they had an experienced and older right back there. So it's understandable.
Right.
Which is also why I wasn't throwing no tantrums. I just knew, looking at it, for this first year, they're getting me in. And then for the second year, we're going to go full throttle. So it was cool. But then, yeah, like you said, 5 appearances, I think, in the league and 1 in the cup. And this opportunity came about, and it just made more sense to me because I'm thinking now I'm in a first division. Do you get it?
Yeah.
I'm not in the second division. I look like my step from here is bigger than my step from Darmstadt if it comes to stepping away again.
Right.
From here, you can go to Prem clubs. You know, you see all the time people go to Prem clubs. They're going everywhere in Europe from the MLS these days.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, kill it in the MLS and you're back where you want to be. You're back. So I thought this is a no-brainer. I've got to go and take this opportunity. And if I choose not to move, or if nothing materialized, then boy, would I not mind staying at New York Red Bulls for a few years? No, I wouldn't. So that was the decision behind that.
And I mean, I remember reading in that Guardian piece that I referenced earlier, you have family in America. Were they East Coast based? Was that any factor?
It wasn't at the time because I didn't know exactly where they were as such.
Okay.
And then I moved out there and it was just a sign from God that this move is crazy. I have two aunties less than half an hour away from me.
Amazing.
Down the road. So I've gone there and they're cooking for me weekly. And it's just, and then there's cousins, their cousins, their sons. One of them is my age. He's 23. Takes me out with his brethren, takes me out with his cousins. So I've got extended family that didn't know about it. And now they're just my closest brethren. And it was just literally, is like, this was meant to happen type of thing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
that is fantastic. I'm very happy for you.
Like, yeah, no, that, it was honestly. That ability to have,
I talk about a lot outside this podcast, that there's a lot of communicators in life. So like music is one, sport is one, food is one. Mm. And like the ability to move across the world, you've already gone from England to Germany, now you're going to America, and have essentially home cooked food every week, is going to make acclimatizing on that journey so much easier. That's such a blessing. So well done on that one. That's very nice. Man.
Yeah, it is a blessing, like? Literally. It's so much more like what I'm used to. So much more like home. I thought my time in Germany was kind of up for now, at least. I always thought, all right, cool, I've done my stint and I want to get more. I want to get back to homeliness. I want to get back to, you know, just speaking English on a daily basis. I want to get back to seeing people who are more like me on a daily basis. And it was time for that. And coming out to New York is obviously just as diverse as London. In fact, it's just a bigger London, essentially. Mm. Like you go out in the city and you just think these are just all the flashing lights and it's just London on a bigger scale. It's very, very cool. I love it out there.
That's sick. I'm glad you're enjoying it. What's your, like, in terms of, do you spend a lot of time going out? What's the culture like that?
COVID.
Come on, Scully. Come on.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? Yeah, I was so involved in this story and your journey. Like,
oh, no, it comes crashing down from a lifestyle point of view now.
I was going to say, because you signed in January 2020, so it wouldn't have been, you wouldn't have had much of a window before suddenly.
Nah, I didn't have that much all clamps of a window. Down. No, I don't have enough to speak about on it. There wasn't much of a window at all. In fact, there was no window because I went out there and, you know, season starting preseason. There was, I don't know what the nightlife is like. I have no idea. I've never been to a club, which is so sad.
Yeah.
I've proper enjoyed this conversation so much, genuinely, that until you said COVID, I forgot we were in. Like, I was like, checking the journey.
One of the worst hit places like in the world. You're talking about.
We're actually in a pandemic. Like.
How did that affect the system over there, the league system? Because I saw like cancelled a few of the cups.
Yeah, last season was tough for everybody, for all the leagues. In fact, for everybody just inside and outside of sport. But the MLS got hit pretty tough as well. Their season starts March. So I've gone there end of Jan, done a few weeks of preseason. Then when we're supposed to start, they've had two games and then everything's come crashing to a halt. We're in our houses for 3-4 months. It's until July. And they had to organize a bubble, just like the NBA one.
Okay.
So we've all gone out to Florida. The NBA actually stole our hotel because we was stunting. The MLS was taking a bit too long and probably obviously wasn't quite as... The incentive wasn't quite as there for the hotel to take the MLS as it would have been for the NBA. Sure. So as we've started to plan our bubble, the NBA started to plan their bubble. They've eventually taken our hotel, taken all our nice things. Anyway, we've gone into a bubble in a hotel in Florida, Disneyland, and they make a tournament up that's never been a thing before, but they call it the MLS is back tournament. And it's the tournament that's supposed to get us, you know, up and running again. the safest way to return to play is basically what it was. So we go out there, we do a little tournament, and the three group games would count towards the season. And then after that, it was just knockout basis, and it was a little fun tournament to get things playing again. Then we come back from that, and the season started as normally as it could again, like as in within the rest of the world with no fans, right, and blah, 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 blah.
Now, this season, this 2020 campaign, you play regularly from what I can see, and you score a penalty, which I haven't watched enough of you play, but I would be surprised to see a fullback step up and take a penalty.
Yeah, I played here and there. It was obviously a tough season. I came in just towards the end of the preseason and missed those first two games, as I said. And then we had the MLS's back tournament. So, you know, the team that had started them two games has gone into that tournament and played that. So up until after that, I hadn't got a game yet. Then I started to kind of make my way into the team and interchange with another kid called Kyle Duncan, who's a top right back. Like, to be honest, he's a very good right back. He started playing for the national team in the season. He's had the season of his life.
Okay.
Just my luck as I get there. So we've kind of interchanged. He's got the more minutes out of the two of us. But I played fairly regularly, yeah, like you said. And but in training, obviously, I'm just putting penalties bins on a regular basis. We actually, when a person is fouled 18 yards from the goal, you know, the session is stopped and we take a penalty.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to just, you know, calling it a goal or just saying, get up. Our coach at the time, he would stop it and call a pen. And I guess I gained the respect of my teammates pretty early on to that. When there was a something like that or a free kick, I would step up. Because at this stage, I've looked back at myself and I'm thinking, what do I need to do to get back to my heights? What did I lose when I was in Germany? What's the difference between me being in Germany and Palace? And the main thing was, I guess, I went to Germany and out of the first team for a while, I guess it must have been confidence. And so I thought, listen, I'm going to go back to what I was doing when I was at Palace. When I was at Palace, I'll take everything. I'll be on corners, I'll be on free kicks, I'll be on wide free kicks, I'll be on pens. And I didn't care about my position because it wasn't about that. It was about who's going to put the ball in the net. And I missed a lot of pens, so it wasn't always putting the ball in the net. But I said, that's what I'm going to do in training. I'm going to gain the respect to my peers to the point where if it ever comes down to it and I'm on the pitch and for some reason, Danny Roy, our main striker, is not on the pitch, I'll go and take the pen. And that's what it came down to in the end. I hadn't missed a pen all season in training. And when it came over, it was kind of like, yeah, Manny, go ahead. Why not?
There's no goal bonus in your contract then, is there?
Nah, that wasn't the deciding factor. I wish there was now, though.
Are you excited to get back to MLS and continue that journey?
There's a lot of change over there, right? Since the season closed, like in terms of sporting director and manager.
Yeah. We've got a new gaffer. And so he actually took the last game of the season.
Okay.
So we've met, but from sacking the manager who brought me in to that last game, you know, the assistant coach took over, and I think with COVID regulations and finding the manager and him having to quarantine and getting his visa sorted, he didn't actually make it until the last game of the season. So, it's going to be interesting going out there. Everybody starts at kind of zero and you're just going out there to go and try and impress a new gaffer. Yeah, so it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, good luck on your journey. I'll definitely be watching more and making sure I'm invested. I really want to see you win, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Can we go back, actually? Because I wanted to ask you, right?
Yeah, go on.
Who were those so-called famous teammates?
So, did you ever get to play with Reece Oxford?
Yeah, that's my brethren.
Yeah, okay, sick. So, I'm an Arsenal fan, obviously, I remember when Reece Oxford, he played against Arsenal.
Yeah.
He had the game of his life.
Yeah.
And I was like, rah, okay, West Ham have one on their hands here. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, he kind of shocked people because he was like, I'm going Gladbach. Me, personally, I like it when English players look at other leagues in the world and think, I'm going to go and do that. And what surprised me is he loved his loan deal there so much, he was like, oh, I'm not coming back. Come back. He's like, nah, I'm here now. I'm like, this is sick. So, hearing about Gladbach and your experience there, I'm like, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And Reece, by the way, right? His mentality is top tier. He came out to my club essentially and helped me through that stage of my career just through his positivity and his outlook in life and football. So it was a time when I was, like I said, in on the fringes at first team, and he came in and we both didn't play as much as we would have probably liked to during that period, or as much as he was trying to during that period. And like you said, even though he wasn't playing as much, he still said, Bundes, I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. I'm extending my loan, first of all. And then he came back again. So you can imagine that kid's mentality. You would never think that he was going through it on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Off the pitch, he was top tier. You know, he'd keep you up, keep you motivated, make sure that you didn't bring your footballing stresses home. I have to give it to Reece. He'd done a lot in that year or however long it was that we played together at Gladbach.
It's good to hear that you built those relationships while you're out there. And it feels like wherever you seem to go, you're finding a lot of people who give you emotional support and keep you going on your journey. And that's really important. And that's 100%. One of the reasons why I think we'll get to where I think we know you can take it.
By God's grace, man.
Definitely by God's grace indeed. I've got to send a special shout out to Olivia for essentially kind of helping us get to put this together.
Yeah.
OT, the plug. Thank you both for having me, man. I've enjoyed it. I appreciate it a lot.
That was Mandela Egbo. Talk about his time in Germany. What prompted him to move from Palace and how he found comfort abroad, both in Germany and the United States, where he's playing right now. Mm-hmm. Well, not technically playing right now. It's the off season, but you get my gist.
Yeah, we got a real kind of picture on what it's like to live the ups and downs of professional football, the difference between it happening at your kind of home club or at a place where everyone speaks the language, you're not far from the people around you to confide in, the difference between that and it happening to you a lot further away from home and as a youngster, as a kid, is really fascinating. And you see the kind of mental fortitude, the dedication, the focus required to get back in a manager's plans, to not get too caught up in not playing and, you know, overthinking and second guessing yourself. And you don't get it just from him. You get it if you hear about how it helped with some of his teammates as well. I thought that was a really interesting insight.
Definitely. I mean, you raise a very important point. I think a lot of people don't realize the mental fortitude it takes to work hard within something like football and go from being the guy that everybody wants on their team to suddenly maybe being out of favor and thinking, right, I need to get back on. I need to work hard. I need to be in the mindset of I can do better and I will do better. And I really applaud that, especially from a young player as well. I really admire that. He really dropped some interesting facts there, especially about the fact that he said nobody from his age was really still playing at that level. Which is very interesting, considering he's described himself as not the most talented of his age level.
Yeah. I think that's more common than you might think, you know. I hear it quite a lot from players of like people they were with at school, people they played with at district who were better than them and they are nowhere to be seen. And sometimes it's an attitude thing. At least that's how it's often framed if you were to ask anyone in working in football. But also it's certain levels. Like, for example, I should have really raised it at the time, but if you know, when it wasn't going well for him at Mönchengladbach and he was going to move on, if you noticed when he was talking about finding a next club, at no point did he mention going back to England. Mm-hmm. It was like, and Brenton Mohammed sort of touched on it the episode before, which is the sort of lower tiers of England and the non-league system. There's a lot of clubs there and a lot of pro clubs, but it has its own ecosystem and it can be a bit of a closed shop sometimes. And you can find yourself falling down very quickly through no real seeming a fault of your own, because, you know, the style of football that's required or the roles you're asked to do at that level where people are playing on livelihoods. If you're a more technical player, they might not really know how to harness you properly. So there's all things like that that factor in. And I thought it was very interesting that he had no desire to come back to England unless it was at a very high level. He'd rather still hone his talent in Germany and stay there, which I thought probably reflects onto that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just... So I think he's very aware that it doesn't have to be England. Like, there's great leagues, obviously, in France, in Germany, in the US, like, all around the world. And as long as he's playing at the top level, he's content with that. But it's just a pleasure to talk to him. I feel like another thing as well that we don't... I feel like the media doesn't ever tell you about how eloquent most footballers are. And I think we know that. But it's great for them to have this space to showcase that for themselves.
Mm.
Well, and it's not like we're putting answers in their mouths. They come out and say these things, and like, I always leave the interview feeling like I've learned something, and you know, it was great.
Well, look, I thought Manny was extra candid, but it's not because, I don't know, I think there's a difference between when you're doing press conference or doing official press, you know, the lights are on you, there's maybe cameras in your face. It all feels a bit too formal. And we see it all the time. People kind of eyes glaze over and they go into this media train mode of like, don't say anything that will like cast aspersions against anyone, that anything that might get misinterpreted. Something that happens all the time, you'll have noticed, Scully, as I'm sure everyone that's listening will, when the only time when players slip up in the media largely tends to be when they go home for international duty and they go back speaking in their home language and they get comfy and they start saying stuff about, I'm not happy here, I'm thinking of leaving soon. It happened to Mahrez recently. People even at that level still make the mistake and they all come back when it gets translated and published in England and they're back, tails between their legs, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. It was out of context. No, you just felt comfy again and honest because you were back where you felt like home. And I feel like...
I think there's definitely a element of that, but I also think it's... if English is not your first language, you have to think. Like, you literally have to think more about what you're doing. Do you understand what I mean? So like, if I was doing a press conference in French, I'd have to deliberate over every word I'm saying because it doesn't come naturally to me. Whereas once you're in your home language, your mother tongue, as it were, everything just...
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, struck by Manny or Mandela, not interested in even risking the possibility of failure, just driven by... I really wish I actually pressed him on that Steve Parish email that he said drives him to this day. But anyway... That's the end of another episode of International Clearance. We'll be back. Got a new episode every Wednesday. Make sure you're following us at INTL Clearance on Instagram and or Twitter. We'll get a teaser for our next guest on Tuesday. Make sure you leave a review as well. 5-star on your appropriate podcast feed. But thank you for listening to this first and foremost. And we'll see you next week. I've been Joe Walker.
I've been Scully.
And that was International Clearance. See you later.